All right. Well, welcome to the Table Talk podcast. Give it a second because it's frozen. There we go. All right. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. My name is Melody Hartzler, as you may be aware, and I have a special guest with me today, Dr. Joel Kahn, and he is a cardiologist that is passionate about functional and integrative medicine. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Melody.
Yes, I'm excited. It's so funny how we connected because you had found my name online because you had a colleague in the past with the same last name. And so Dr. Kahn sent me an email saying, hey, are you related to this person? Which I don't think I am, but there's a long history of Hartzler's. So maybe there is some connection in our past, but your colleague had been very prominent in this cardiology, interventional cardiology space too. So that's super interesting how the world connects people even later. But we're both passionate about helping people with chronic inflammatory things, and especially when it comes to metabolic syndrome. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into this from traditional cardiology and what your path has been?
Sure. I grew up in southeastern Michigan, not that far from you. Thought I was going to go into a family retail business, but I got the biology bug in high school and sort of knew if it was going to be medicine, it was going to be cardiology really in high school. Just what I enjoyed. And very luckily, the University of Michigan had a program where you got into medical school when you were all of 17. So I was able to grab that and do it in 6 years and always focused on heart. And then I went to Dallas and trained to become a cardiologist, called a fellowship. And then I went to Kansas City, Missouri and worked with Dr. Hartzler, the world famous cardiologist of blessed memory, sadly. And I thought I was going to end up a Florida cardiologist, but I ended up back in my home state of Michigan. I've been there ever since. Although now I'm doing a hybrid. I'm in Florida right now for a few months. I have an office. So life cycles around. But at any rate, I started out always doing what cardiologists do, hospitals, cath labs, heart attacks, 3 a.m, loved it, beepers, rushing. But at age 18, I stopped eating all animal products. It wasn't a big epiphany. I grew up eating kosher, so we didn't do cheeseburgers and pork at home. And in college, the salad bar worked. And I started reading books on nutrition. My colleagues weren't doing that. They're great people, but they weren't eating salad bar life, which we now call pretty much vegan. And the books I read impressed me. So then I quietly got my way through medical training, eating a lot of salads and okra and beans and peas, and you know, nobody really taught you much back then. But in 1990, that's a long time ago, but that's the year I started practice in Ann Arbor, Michigan. A paper was published, and I'm almost done, by Dr. Dean Ornish, very famous physician, still doing amazing research, 1990, 35 years later. And it was about how you could reverse heart disease using a whole food plant-based diet. And so I wasn't planning it, but I started to teach my patients, this is something we could do and something that's available. And as more books, more studies, more research, I got more committed to what I was doing both in my own life and in the practice. And about 10 years ago, I said, enough. You know, there's other docs that can go to the hospital and take care of heart attacks at 3 a.m. I did my share for 25 years. All I do now is preventive cardiology, nutritional cardiology, supplement cardiology, lifestyle cardiology. And I mean, the work is endless because it really is, you know, bullseye. And as early as possible, if I can get somebody when they're 18 to 25, they're going to have a much better life than I get them when they're 65 because they've already messed up their body. So we try and mess the body.
Sure. Whoops. I get some echo all of a sudden here. Let me see if I can.
I don't hear it.
You don't hear it? No. Okay. I think it went away. Okay. We'll edit that part out. But as far as your current practice, if someone comes to you and say, like, this is the patient that's coming to me most often. This is a 40-year-old, often female. They're going into menopause. So we're talking hormones and all of those kinds of things. Maybe they're 45, closer to 50, but they have this cardiac risk, right? And they have a high hsCRP. Maybe they've even done a coronary calcium score and started to see some calcium in the carotid artery. What is that conversation that you have with a patient that looks like that when they come into your office? Is it drastic, like you plant-based fully? Is it a phase in process? Are there certain supplements and nutrients that you're absolutely have to start at the beginning? Or what does that look like when that person's coming to you?
Yeah, and that is a pretty common patient profile. The only thing you didn't mention, they're usually holding a prescription for a pharmaceutical cholesterol lowering agent.
Yes. Yes.
And they're asking, do I really need this? My primary care doc, my gynecologist, said I should start taking it every day for the rest of my life. And
right.
They're not too excited about that. So, you know, I spend an hour with them and I ask literally breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, when they start the day eating, when they end the day eating, where they buy their food, who cooks their food, how many carry out meals, restaurants, you know, booze, their fitness routine, their smoking history, their family history in great detail. Dental history. I want to know when they are going to get their teeth cleaned and what they say about their gums. Very strong connection between periodontal health and overall health, but heart health.
Sure.
You know, surgical history, trauma history. You know, but I want to know about their life, their spouse, if they have their kids, their pets, their moves around the country. And that's a great foundation. But ultimately, one, I'm probably going to get more labs. You already said the magic word, inflammation. Most
yes.
primary care docs don't do any. And if they do one test called the high sensitivity C-reactive protein, HSCRP, been around 25 mm-hmm. years, widely available. It's a great test. Everybody should have it. And when it's elevated, it's just a clue. Something is very wrong. And you got to really put on your Sherlock Holmes hat and figure out, is it the teeth? Is it the weight? Is it the food? Is it the skin, the psoriasis, the vasculitis? Is it the snoring and the sleep apnea? You just got to be a detective. You can't always find it. Then I got to get more blood work. And I've got to, besides that test, there's about five other inflammation tests that have strong science. And Quest, LabCorp, Hospital Lab, they all offer it. I want to know vitamin levels, vitamin D, B12, folate, omega-3, sometimes more than that. But omega-3 blood test is very important. If you're eating mm-hmm. salmon 3-4 times a week, you're probably getting enough omega-3. A lot of my patients are largely or completely plant-based, so that's not on the menu. And I got to teach them about flaxseed, chia seeds, hemp hearts, walnuts, leafy greens, chlorella, spirulina, supplements, and the rest. But ultimately, if let's just say it's a 53-year-old woman who went through menopause last year, no periods for a year. One, I'm going to talk to her about hormone replacement therapy as an option,
mm-hmm.
but I'm going to do something to look at her arteries. This is based on a very old concept in the 1600s. You are as old as your arteries, said a white mm-hmm. English physician, and you should know how old your arteries are. Maybe not when you're 25, but when you're 52, you can do an ultrasound of the arteries of the brain called carotid arteries. And the report actually says, you're 52 and your arteries look like a 41-year-old woman. Amazing. Or look mm-hmm. like a 69-year-old woman. Not so amazing. And it can show little bumps called plaque.
That right.
person might need, you know, intensive treatment. Now, the intensive treatment might be 3 months of going to the gym and eating oatmeal for breakfast and a lot more fiber. They can become plant-based. I'm going to ask them to watch Forks Over Knives and What the Health, the Game Changers movie, maybe read a book I wrote called The Plant-Based Solution, maybe not, or a Dr. Joel Fuhrman book, The End of Heart Disease. That's a big book to read, but it's a good one. And give them 3 months to see if we can move the needle without drugs. We're certainly not going to rush to a drug. There is also, and I just want to sneak this in for your listeners, if I decide it's worth it, there's a CT scan called a coronary
right.
artery calcium CT scan. Takes literally 4 seconds, hold your breath, no needle, no injection, no pain, no claustrophobia. Most cities cost about $100 out of pocket. I won't do that on a 28-year-old woman. There is about the same radiation as a mammogram. There is some radiation. It's very low. But if that 52, 53-year-old woman, her lab panel concerns me or her family history concerns me, or she just wants to know her artery age, we'll do the scan at a local hospital, comes back zero. There's actually data. She doesn't need to be on prescription drugs. We'll work with diet, lifestyle, stress management, supplements for a long time. That's science. But if I am detecting early heart disease, we're going to get more aggressive. We're going to just tailor it to the individual.
Sure. Is there a specific level at which there's calcifications present on that coronary calcium score that says, hey, I think you need medication? Or, I mean, obviously there's other factors, but is there sort of a cutoff for you?
Yeah. Number one, you know, there is a number. That's why it's called a calcium score. And zero is the winner. Zero is 99% protective. Now, it's more protective at 52 than 42, because as your arteries might be getting diseased, you develop something called soft fatty plaque, kind of like buttery plaque, that doesn't have calcium. And you be zero, but you might have a little plaque in you. By 52, if you're a zero, and by 62, if you're a zero, you're in good shape. We rarely use this CT scan in 25-year-olds. The ultrasound is no radiation, and I'd easily do that if a 25-year-old came to my clinic. Sometimes that's patients of mine send their kids in, you know, for a happy lifestyle, make sure they're not falling apart already. And my kids are in their 30s and all. They've all had their carotid scanned. I think it's very reasonable. It's a very simple, painless test.
Yeah.
But the science says that the trade-off between taking the drug, very inexpensive drugs, there definitely can be side effects, but they're relatively infrequent because I use low doses of prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. I need to. It's a calcium score of over 100. But I just will backtrack. If I have a 52-year-old woman with a calcium score of 70, I'm going to tell you that is distinctively abnormal. That is a woman who's going to start racing to heart disease. So I might move to a drug, but I'm still going to give her, you know, 2-3 months. I still might try, I'll throw out names, red yeast, rice, bergamot, bourbon, omega-3 fish oil, or vegan supplementation, and the gym, and trying to sleep, and trying to manage her stress, you know, the whole holistic approach to it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Are you using any other markers like myeloperoxidase or some of those other cardiac specific inflammatory markers? I know we also look at lipoprotein A too, because that's that independent risk factor, but how does that factor into that patient profile?
Yeah, there's my standard Quest lab. I don't own Quest lab, just a big one.
Yes.
Probably 100 boxes there. No, I don't draw all 100 on them.
Right.
But this entire section is all the inflammatory markers you just mentioned, myeloperoxidase, LPPLA2. There's some new ones on the map, interleukin-6, cystatin C, but I'll do them all. I want, you know, power and information. And I really want to characterize that person one at a time. It's like that old saying about throwing starfish back in the ocean one at a time. It matters for that one person. Right. I want to characterize. And I want to know, you know, blood sugar, insulin, the whole insulin resistance thing, which is, you got to do it by blood work. So yeah, we'll do. And lipoprotein A, I don't know if you're aware, I'm the only physician in the world who's written a book about lipoprotein A. It's a
We'll link that in the show notes.
Pretty decent, thin book. It's of course on the big booksellers and all, full of recipes too, just for fun. But I have a huge practice. Lipoprotein A, genetic cholesterol that affects 20 to 25% of women. And can trigger premature heart disease and can be managed, even though we do not have an FDA-approved drug for it right now. We're at least a year away from having Lipitor and Crestor do nothing for this. We're talking about lipoprotein.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like the PCSK9 inhibitors are, or PCSK9 inhibitors are going to have an effect on that. But like you said, there's no FDA approvals at this point.
Expensive injectable drugs, and they will fight us on trying to get it approved. So PCSK9 inhibitors, maybe 10% of my patients at most are on them, but I can't put down lipoprotein A because the insurance company.
Right. Exactly.
They don't care. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. There has to be intolerance to statins or other reasons why that you have to go jump to that.
Correct.
Right. Okay. And then, so as far as those supplements that you recommended or that you mentioned, the berberine, the omega-3s, doing maybe even some red yeast rice and someone that might not necessarily need a statin, what is your, like, I've been to some, lots of functional medicine conferences. There's always this laundry list of supplements that helps with cardiology, but then it's like, wow, like, can I really get a person to take all 10 of those things in a day? Obviously we want them to do the lifestyle things, but in America, we live in this place where people want a quick fix, or we want like something that's easy to swallow and doesn't require them to do everything that we want them to do from a lifestyle. But are there certain ones that you found like a bigger bang for your buck and asking people to utilize when we're talking that, you know, inflamed person with some of that picture we were referring to?
Yeah, two of them. And it's a little different than what other people do. If the LDL is the issue, which is common, and I can't correct it through diet and fitness, or we don't want to wait and we don't want to put a prescription drug, Red Yeast Rice, which is a funny name, but it's just has, the reason I like it is one, it's inexpensive because I don't want to drive a person's budget insane. Two, I like that there's actually a lot of published science on it. It's very popular in China and that part of the world, and they do big research studies. So you'll find research studies with 5,000 heart attack survivors that are taking Red Yeast Rice or placebo. That's as big as, you know, what the FDA requires for pharma-driven drugs. So I'd rather pick something that has some backup to it like that than, you know, berberine's nice. There's no good long outcome studies on berberine, and it's pretty mild for cholesterol. It's a little better for blood sugar or gut health. The other one that most people may not use, and I'll even reach behind me because I have a shelf full of vitamins I take, I still use a lot of niacin. This inexpensive. Since 1960s, there's a lot of, the first study to show that a supplement can lower heart attack risk was actually niacin. It's called the Coronary Drug Project. I think it was published in 1975. Impressive data. Doctors have fallen out of favor with niacin. It lowers cholesterol, it lowers triglycerides, it lowers LDL, it raises HDL, and magically it lowers that lipoprotein A annoying little particle. And sometimes dramatically lowers lipoprotein little A. You got to warn the patient about a hot flush and rash. You got to repeat lab work, make sure it's being well tolerated by their liver, their uric acid. But there's actually some intriguing data. It's controversial. Some niacin gets converted to NAD+. And you know how cuckoo crazy the functional medicine world is. Anything that boosts NAD+, like NR, NMN, like, but nobody thinks about niacin for 22 cents a day. They go get a, you know, $800 NAD plus infusion. So a lot of my patients are benefiting from higher NAD plus levels just because they're taking niacin.
Oh, that's interesting connection. I didn't think about that before. When you are looking for a product for red yeast rice, some of the things that we talk to our patients about, but I'd be interested in your perspective about the potential contaminants, the, is it citrullinated and monacolin A that can be contaminated in red yeast rice? So if you're telling your patient to buy a certain product, I know you stock certain products in your office, but how do you ensure that product isn't going to have those contaminants that could be harmful on their kidneys?
Yeah, it's tough. And number one, I've used niacin over 1,000 people. I've never once seen, and I do repeat blood work religiously in 8 weeks, never seen a kidney issue. Number two, I read, you know, between company websites, third-party testing, consumer reports, and the rest. So I think there's, you know, there's been a scare factor about niacin, the scare factor about red yeast rice. I think a little of it, I'm not the world's biggest conspiracy-oriented person. I think is pharma pushing these supplements down. Although, you know, statins cost pennies a day, so this argument that statins are fully a money-backed, you know, plan was maybe true 25 years ago when these drugs were expensive. They're, statins could be cheaper than niacin nowadays at, you know, Costco, Walmart, and the rest. So I'll do that. And some of them say right on it, you know, citrulline-free all. So we got to be a little selective. You know, we all got our favorites, Pure and Orthomolecular, Designs for Health, and others like that. Yeah. This brand of niacin is used by most cholesterol experts that still use niacin.
Okay. Yeah. If you want to, what was that brand again?
The company is called Endurance Products. I think they're out of Portland and it's called Enduracin, like niacin. I don't own the company. The company's been around, a long time.
Okay, perfect. We can link that. As far as the red yeast rice, you continue that long-term, right? Just like if as sort of a replacement for a statin?
Yes. You know, again, always pushing lifestyle. You know, if you can naturally lose 40 pounds. I'm a big fan of Prolon, the five-day fasting mimicking diet. Yeah. I have people that do slowly, progressively lose weight and keep it off by doing that every month or every other month. I do it about 3-4 times a year. It's not as effective as Mounjaro and Ozempic for losing 30% of your body weight, but it's also safer, safer and has great data. But yeah, we'll get them off if we can, you know, prescription drugs and even supplements. But usually it's long-term. You can combine red yeast rice with a very expensive prescription called ezetimibe. And that's kind of like combining a statin and ezetimibe, which is a wonderful low dose, a safe approach to many people. Mm-hmm. So you can use red yeast rice with anything, with omega 3, with berberine.
Yeah.
It doesn't really interact with other supplements.
Sure. Yeah. So just for our listeners, ezetimibe that he mentioned is a drug that helps block cholesterol absorption in the gut, which is a different mechanism and pairs well with the mechanism of helping the body produce less cholesterol that happens with statins or with the red yeast rice. So one question that comes up a lot when patients are holding that prescription asking if they should take a statin or not is that there's some data showing that statins increase risk of diabetes. Yep. And I have, and there's this little bit of a debate in the community because we know that these patients often are also people that are at risk for diabetes based on their lifestyle and things like that. We know that statins deplete CoQ10. So part of me thinks that part of that increased risk for diabetes is related to the impairment in the mitochondria with the less CoQ10. But then there's this bottle of CoQ10. Then I've also seen some microbiome things like papers in PubMed talking about the microbiome changes related to statins. So I guess my question is, do you see that side effect with the red yeast rice because it has a similar mechanism to statins, or does the fact that we've got the extra antioxidants with the red yeast rice and sort of a whole molecule herb versus the very selective part play a difference there, play a role?
Yeah. And when you do careful blood work, you will see hemoglobin A1C go up, or somebody will come to me on a statin and their hemoglobin A1C or their insulin levels up. I'll take the statin away for 8 weeks and I'll see it come down. Now, it's usually the word on the street, in my own opinion, it's usually somebody who's already metabolically unhealthy and they are pre-diabetic, insulin resistant, and you add a statin, it goes up a little bit. We're not turning people into, diabetic ketoacidosis. And
right.
The numbers deteriorate a bit. They stop the statin, the numbers return to baseline by small amounts, but they're meaningful if you're going to do this for your whole life. In metabolically healthy people, maybe the hemoglobin A1C goes 5.1 to 5.2, but it can do that, around Christmas, anytime and almost anybody. Anyways, I worry a little bit more about muscle aching, which does happen. It goes away as soon as you stop the statin, and pretty rarely liver enzyme elevation. There are very rare, severe statin side effects. I've actually read about them. I've never seen, there's one called rhabdomyolysis where urine turns brown because you're destroying your muscles. I think maybe I've seen that a couple times in a 35-year career. There's also an antibody to statins you can get, and that can really disable a person, but I've read about it. I've never seen it. So, and the key is when you use ezetimibe, it's like peanut butter and jelly. It's what I tell patients. I can keep your statin dose so low and add CoQ10 with ezetimibe and get great numbers. And that just reminds me, everybody on a statin, and I would say everybody on red yeast rice should be on, I use lots of CoQ10, 400, 600, 800 milligrams in a lot of people. And there is a rat study that showed it prevented the rise in blood sugar when you introduce a statin to a rat. I don't think there's a convincing human study.
I haven't seen one, but I mean, theoretically, it makes sense based on that animal model and then the mitochondrial discussion with diabetes. But yeah, maybe we should do that study.
It might be out there. I'm not sure.
Might be out there. So as far as we talked about the red yeast rice, I was going to say my rhabdo experience that I saw a patient. So it was actually my neighbor when I was in residency. He was on diltiazem, which interacts with statins and causes the statin level to be higher with certain ones. And so he was on a statin, went to a pharmacy for that one through his insurance, but then got the diltiazem filled like on a $4 list somewhere at a pharmacy that did not trigger his insurance. And so then the pharmacy didn't know he was taking both of those. And then that caused him to go into rhabdo. So sometimes it's more of that drug interaction thing that happens, but it was unfortunate that he didn't fill at the same place and then they could have caught that easier. Yeah. Well, anything else from your perspective, from a preventative cardiology, and plant-based diet, we'll link those resources that you were talking about. Do you feel like everyone has to do a plant-based diet if they have a certain level of cardiovascular disease? He's like, yes. Or is there, because I'm sure there are patients coming to you that are not 100% adherent to a plant-based diet, and do they improve as well? I mean, protein, I think about, like, my daughter, for example, is allergic to peas and lentils. So, like,
but she's 31 now, but she is. She's
coming. It would be hard for her to do a fully plant.
We're putting all the peas and lentils and nuts, locked away in a safe, basically, just like.
Yes. Yes. It's interesting. And I mean, personally, from a functional medicine standpoint, I think she's allergic to peas because I had a poor hyperpermeable gut when I was pregnant with her and nursing her, and I was eating pea protein shakes and things like that. But who knows what the real reaction piece is. But I feel like people like that, it's probably hard to do a fully plant-based diet because they're limited on their plant protein.
Right. Yeah, there's no doubt. Although my daughter at 31 is plant-based, but does avoid some of the staples that I eat every day, beans and lentils and nuts. You know, it's an undone experiment. But if you ask me, if we could get 1,000 kids to start eating whole food plant-based, we just cook them 3 meals a day, really good stuff, healthy stuff, drop them off at their doorstep at their dorm and get them going. And we took 1,000 kids and put them on some other healthy diet or just let them do what they do, which isn't usually very healthy. There's no doubt blood pressure, cholesterol, insulin resistance, inflammation markers, maybe body weight would be very good in those 1,000 kids. But I'm also a realist. You know, I've been in the vegan movement for 47 years since I was 18. You know, the numbers haven't grown phenomenally. And I used to be in the vegan restaurant business, healthy vegan restaurant. And the vegan healthy restaurant business is very slim and it hasn't grown. It's very distressing. So I have patients with every kind of diet under the sun. And like all of us, get rid of crap processes, sugar, white flour, you know, things wrapped in plastic and, you know, learn to cook. You know, I do teach, this is an interesting, just quick topic. I teach my patients about advanced glycation end products that you take a breast of chicken, you throw it in a Instapot or a crock pot and you kind of cook it in a wet environment. It doesn't create a lot of a chemical reaction called advanced glycation end product. You throw the same chicken breast on the barbecue, on the grill, on the Foreman grill. You burn the hell out of it because everybody likes those crispy little corners. Mm. You've created a chemical bombshell that can really affect your artery health, your nerve health, your blood sugar, your prediabetes. Just read about advanced glycation end product. Yeah. So, you know, it's both what you eat and it's how you cook it. And then you got all the other stressors in the world. A low AGE diet. There's one cookbook I'm aware of that tackled that quite a while ago, 10 plus years ago, is a very good idea if you're not plant-based. Plants don't create much in the way of AGEs. It's animal products and dairy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also the spike in the blood sugars and that in your own body when people are doing high fructose corn syrup and lots of carbs and sugar. So awesome. Well, anything else that you want to share with our audience as far as tools or places, where can they find your, I know we'll link them below, but they can probably find your books on Amazon and on your website.
Yep. And I have a clinic in Detroit and a clinic in Florida, but I'm licensed in about 25 states. So I do a lot of, do a lot of telemedicine, you know, California, New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio. I'm a, Ohio, a lot of patients, some of them drive to see me. It's not that far. DrJoelKahn.com, DrJoelKahn.com. And there's a link to a weekly podcast and blogs, but there's a link to my clinic.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you. Appreciate your time today. I know you're a busy guy and try and enjoy some sunshine there to get your vitamin D in Florida. Yeah. So appreciate you stepping away and chatting with me for a few minutes. I think our audience.
Total pleasure.
Enjoy this.
You keep doing good work. We need all team. Yeah. So. You're the heart. You're the Hartzler team. Makes me happy.
The Hartzler team, exactly. It'll focus on that heart health. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.